Welcome. You are listening to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we love to talk about teaching multilingual learners. I'm your host, Colette Ferron Goodwin, and I'm a resource specialist on the EML team with the Mid-State Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network at OCM BOCES in Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to another episode of Our Burning Questions. Our burning questions for today are, what are the benefits of being part of a professional learning community, or PLC, and how does it directly impact teaching and learning for Ls and Mls? And how does this participation impact teaching literacy and language and mathematics? And here to respond to these questions is my very special guest, Jian Lu. Jian, welcome.
Hello. Hi, everyone. My name is Jian Liu. Currently, I'm an adjunct assistant professor of mathematics at New York University School of Professional Study. My last position was as associate in bilingual education within the Office of Bilingual Education and World Languages at New York State Education Department. But I started my career as a high school bilingual mathematics teacher in a public school within New York City public school education system. So that's a little bit about my professional background. And my special area of interest is how to bridge the language learning, literacy learning in the content area, particularly in mathematics, because I was trained as a teacher of mathematics. I went through the traditional teacher education program at the City College of New York and also New York University. And also another interesting part about my L and bilingual education background, because I'm a first generation college student. I originally immigrated to the United States with my family in April 2005. So I personally experienced as a formal English language learner in a public school, a transfer high school called Lower East Side Preparatory High School in Lower Manhattan. And later I become a high school algebra teacher. I always understand the struggle as a formal English language learner. And also I do consider mathematics as a language as well, because we do have our own rules, the order of operations, different properties we use in mathematics. So that's where is my particular interest in how do we bridge language learning in the content area, particularly within the mathematics class.
Thank you very much. That was very, very extensive. And just so our listeners know, your affiliation with the New York State Office of Bilingual Education and World Languages is connected to the Arburns. And so that's how we're connected, right?
Yeah, from my last position.
Yes, in your last position. Yes, and that's how we met.
Yep.
I'm very excited to see you again and to have you as a guest on our podcast.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we talked about an article about professional learning communities. And our first question that we want to focus on today is the benefits of being part of a PLC and how it impacts learning for English language learners and multilingual learners. Could you tell us a little bit about what opportunities PLCs might provide to educators that directly improve teaching and learning?
Yes. So in this article from STE, they talk about four different benefits, but they even emphasizes on the active professional learning community. So if you are able to listen to this podcast today, that means you are personally engaged in professional learning community, but we didn't get a chance to face-to-face or to directly to ask questions, but you were able to listen to my past experience. And also I'm sure the Arburn also provide professional learning opportunities either in person or through the online platform. That's also where you can build your professional learning community and interact, engaged with other members. So the first benefit right now that we want to talk about, the PLCs allow educators opportunity to directly improve teaching and learning. So imagine that whether you are experienced veteran teachers or you are new to this profession, there is an old Chinese saying, it's never too late to learn. There is always something new, especially now during the pandemic, we also transition into a lot of technologies. You may be not be the person who knows every single technologies or new teaching research or pedagogies, but if you are able to join a professional learning communities, we will be able to share those expertise and experiences, pedagogies, share resources with each other. So in that way, hopefully you will be able to reflect on what you have learned and bring some strategies back to your own classroom that will be directly improve your own teaching and learning. And then the ultimate goal is to improve students' learning outcomes.
Right. So speaking about students' learning outcomes, how does this directly impact English language learners and multilingual learners?
Right. So for example, if you join the Arbor, so you will learn a lot of strategies, pedagogies, best researchers, and the best practices from other members. So that will have a direct impact on certain things. Because later we may talk more a little bit more about the content. One struggle as a content teacher, especially like in my case, or people similar to my background, was we were trained through the traditional teacher preparation program. We were trained as a mathematics teacher or a social study teacher or a science teacher. We were not trained as ESL teacher or bilingual teacher. So that's why it is very important if you join a professional learning community with members from diverse cultural, linguistic, professional, and education background. So we will always learn something new from each other. But for my case, it's a little bit special as I introduced as an immigrant, as an English language learner myself. In fact, my second master's degree was in bilingual childhood education. So that's where I personally experienced as an English language learner. I'm not only learning the mathematics content while I was in high school, but at the same time, I'm also learning how to do this mathematics in another language. In my case, we will be in English. And then later on, when I become a teacher, I feel we do work with a lot of, especially in New York City, most of the public schools, you will interact with students with special needs or English language learners in your classroom. So that's where how I decide to go back to school part-time to learn more about bilingual education and direct strategies working with English language learners.
And I wanted to add to that too, that being part of a professional learning community is helpful because when we provide professional learning or you do something like online, like an online course, an asynchronous course, or even attending like a webinar, what do you do with that once you leave that webinar? I think people have a kind of a misconception about, you know, getting the strategies and being able to use them, but then there's no real way to figure out whether or not those strategies or using those strategies are showing impact. And how do we measure that?
Yeah, I think that's also an interesting question. That's personally how all these resonate with me. A lot of research shows this is work, that is work, but I always think your research conducted in a certain setting with a very specific student population as your study subject. But what I encourage people to do, if a concept is new to you, so you bring the awareness to you, if you want, you can join the follow-up sessions to learn more about the topic or do some research on your own. I'm sure there are a lot of available high-quality resources available on the internet. So in that way, you will be able to have a little bit better understanding. But keep those in mind. So when you design your lessons, when you create your lesson plans or class activities, be a little bit inclusive to incorporate those ideas. And also, if you see a demonstration for a certain teaching practices, try a little bit within your own classroom. Yeah, don't wait until your supervisors come in to observe you. Yeah, maybe you should just try a little bit in your classroom. And if you know your student better, you know their cultural, linguistic, and academic background. So you always make modifications adaptations to make modifications fit into your own classroom situation. That's what I always encourage teachers to do. Otherwise, this is only stayed within this webinar or within this podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times we always joking around, oh, I think my mind is at the step, but I'm not, my hand still doesn't coordinate well. So I highly encourage all of you, based on your level, like your level of confidence, based on your level of components, based on your level of practical skills, just try a little bit. And also feel free to invite other peoples or co-planning together to ask the feedback, the ideas, or maybe invite another teachers to come in to observe you. So in that way, you are not only learn this for yourself, you are also bring these ideas with other teachers as well. So that is another beauty to join any professional learning community or to attend any professional learning opportunities with some other colleagues that you know, maybe from the same school, maybe from different districts. So in that way, we can always talk, like in our education term is accountable talk, even after the session ends, the impact still on you and on the attendees, because we still can discuss about what we have learned, whether that works for our own student or not. So in that way, you are not feeling alone. So I highly recommend you, if you want to join any professional learning communities or join any webinars or in-person trainings, bring a team member, whether from the same department or different department.
And I think you're kind of alluding to the fact that it's helpful to have other have relationships, building relationships around learning. So, and that is actually the second benefit, right, of doing this, is that you're able to build relationships in this process and strengthen them. So,
yes.
So you kind of mentioned, you know, a team member. So who might be a good person to build a relationship with in this case?
Yeah, so the second benefit I just want to reiterate again is professional learning communities build stronger relationships between team members. The reason why we call the professional learning community, because it may set up as a certain structure, so you will be able to meet the same group either as a cohort or similar people every time. So in that way, you definitely expanded your network. I think this is also depends on your stage in your profession. So when I was a novice teacher at the beginning, I mostly put myself as a learner's shoes. So I built my relationship with other colleagues, other participants. And also, if you want to expand your network, I highly recommend you to build a relationship with the presenters, because they usually are the expert or who has studied this topic in this particular area a little bit more, have very knowledgeable, practical, and research background. So in that way, you can also build your connection with presenter as well. But after you have more experience and you also become a teacher leader, you want to share. So in that way, you all, like as I said, you definitely need to build your relationship with the presenters and maybe observe their presentation skills and the strategies and the structures. So in that way, you will be the turnkey person, bring this ideas, the information or resources you learn at this particular conference or professional learning opportunities back to your school. Yeah, so you really need to, it depends on your stage in your profession, and always set a goal for yourself, like why I need to spend this time. And also sometimes a lot of those conferences are very expensive as well. Why I need to spend money and time to attend those conferences. So build a purpose for yourself. So for example, when I was a classroom, I'm more focused on teaching pedagogy. So I like to go to workshops with presenters or experienced teachers who share a lot of teaching practices. But later, when I worked within New York City Department of Education in the Office of Assessment, because I directly relate to my work about assessment design, the large scale assessment design. So I would like to attend more sessions about assessment practices, how to create the best practices, how to be inclusive around that section. And later, when I joined the New York City Education Department, I'm more focused on education policies. So that's where I go to different conferences. I personally would love to attend more top more sessions around policies or implementation of programs as well. So that really depends on your stage and what is your goal. Even you as a teacher, you still can attend the sections like more focus on leadership, on program management as well. That's also help you to build your network, to meet other leaders in the field. That's also bring new ideas, perspectives to you. To be honest, like, do I really know where I want to be when I first started? I thought maybe I just become a teacher and I retired on my position. But no, because I joined the professional learning community, I was able to go out to build stronger relationships with other members, whether facilitators, presenters, or other colleagues. They opened my mind. They opened a lot of new opportunities for me, because we don't know what we don't know. So that's also another beauty. We always learn from each other.
Right. Right. And you're actually speaking from a content area teacher's perspective, right?
Yes.
But you do have that lens because you were a former L as well. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, it's important for not just the ENL teachers, right? It's important for all teachers, because all teachers are teachers of L's.
Exactly. That's directly related to the OBEWL's blueprint. Yeah, the first principle is all teachers to consider teachers of English language learner. So I can just share a little bit fun fact. Why first immigrant here? Like, when I was in China, I almost finished high school. I know that I want to become a high school math teacher. But when I first immigrant to the US, I feel like, oh, English language is so hard. Mm. Yeah, but I still want to become a teacher. But which subject maybe involved the least amount of language? I thought it's mathematics because it's only numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I did change my mind completely 180 degree flip around, was because I took a course at the City College called the Bridge to Advanced Calculus. So from my general calculus 1 to 3 was more focused on computation. But this bridge is really transitioning into doing some proofs, but you have to use English language to communicate. Yes. Because my professor doesn't speak Chinese. I cannot write in Chinese. He even correct my punctuation. I need to capitalize my first letter of my sentence. That's really, this is a mathematics class. Is already only for math major people. I said, really, you correct my writing? And when we're writing our proof, we don't see numbers anymore. We're using all those libraries to make more abstract thinking. So for example, can you prove even number plus an even number still an even number? Or odd number plus an odd number is still, it will be an even number. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make it the general case. Then that start from that moment, I realized that, yes, mathematics is not only numbers. In order to communicate, there is the language, English language behind, because we call this academic language. Yeah, and another fun fact, when I first immigrated to the States, back then we were still doing math. A, Mass B regions. Right now it's Algebra 1, Algebra 2, trig, and geometry. So I took my Mass 1 region. I was able, I came in April 20, and then the spring break. And I took my Mass regions in Chinese in June. I got 100% on my regions.
Oh, so my goodness.
Yeah, that shows me I know my content.
Yeah.
I just don't know how to express myself in English in my content subject area or even in life, but that doesn't mean I'm stupid. So that's no. I also want to give the message to the teachers. When you see a student, maybe they still respond to your questions slowly. Doesn't mean they don't understand. Maybe this is a language barrier. This is not a disability. Like, for example, that's the example I always tell to other people to understand my struggle as an English language learner. I know how to do a quadratic equation. If you tell me this quadratic equation in Chinese, I know how to do it. I can apply the formula to solve the question, but you're using this English terminologies, quadratic equation. Wow, that word is so big. Yeah, I don't understand that at all. So that's another difficulty for us as English language learners, because this is not just English language involved. Behind this word quadratic equation, there is a whole mathematical equation, a mathematical concept behind these two simple vocabularies. So that is why it is so difficult for English learners. I have to learn the mathematics. Luckily, I had the content background, so I don't need to struggle. So I told myself, when I was in my math class, my teacher only speaking English. I need to pay attention how the teacher pronounced each vocabulary. How does the teacher say these terminologies in English? But imagine if it's another student, they also need to learn the content. So they need to spend even double or triple amount of energy to understand the concept. So that's also bring up another question. Is really a disability or is just a language barriers, right? So if it's only the language barriers, that's why we as a content teacher, because the student are in your class, their result will affect your teaching practices, your evaluation. So it's better to teach academic language as well. But then let's bring back to the questions, the struggles, I said, for most of the math teacher or science teacher, subject teacher, because we were trained in that certain subject. We didn't train as a language teacher. So that's why it is so important. I highly encourage you, for those people who is listening to today's podcast, if you are a content subject teacher, like myself as a math teacher or a social study or as science teacher, come to the urban workshops. So you will learn and hear the struggles, the experiences, the strategies, the resources, the templates, the worksheet, your expert colleagues who developed and shared with you. So in that way, you can use that with your student as well in your own classroom. So this is a win-win situation. So if you are the ESOL teacher, next time I highly encourage you to bring a content teacher from your school to join the session with you together. And you can even discuss how can we apply those literacy skills, ESOL or bilingual strategies into the content areas. So in that way, I'm sure they will value your input more because you as a certified ESOL or bilingual educators as expert in these areas. So in that way, you're also building your strong bonding and the relationships with teachers from other departments as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And you've already mentioned this about, you know, learning more research and technology. Do you have other suggestions for educators who might be interested in doing this and how to do that?
Yeah, so PLCs help teachers stay on top of the new research and emerging technology tools for the classroom. As I mentioned earlier, I don't know what I don't know. Mm-hmm. We only can be expert in certain areas. You are not going to master every single technologies. As you can see, since the pandemic, we transitioned into more, even before the pandemic, I already using a lot of technologies in my classroom, but there is never a chance for me to understand or to get a chance to use. So my recommendation here, less is more. You don't need to understand or to use every single new technologies. But you can learn from other teachers. You can be aware of what is available out there, but you can just master few tools, very handful tools that you can handle. To be honest, that's not only easy for you as a teacher, that's also going to be easy for your student. Yeah, for example, today you're using Kahoot, tomorrow you're using the formative, next day you're using Poolware. The student has to struggle, especially for the student who may need some consistent structure. Right. You constantly make the change. Even this may be difficult for parents. After using certain strategies or certain technology tools, maybe you can run a quick demo session with parents so they can support students learning at home for certain learning management system. But imagine if today you're using this one, next day you're using another one, parents have struggled too. So make our life easier using technology, less is more. Just be proficient in very handful too. Like for example, I only use Kahoot when I'm doing a lot of engagement. Yeah, I know Poolware, I know Pear Deck, I know Nearpod, but I didn't register an account because I feel like, yeah, this one too is enough fit into my teaching outcomes, my learning objectives. Right. So, but of course, yeah, I'm not saying you should not stay on top of that. So that is why join a professional learning community, you will learn other people's experience. Yeah, I don't need to directly immersed in using that, but I can learn from other people's experience. So that's why it is also important. You should be a little bit more active, not a passive participant in the professional learning community. You are part of this community. Your experience is also valuable. Even this is experience leading into a failure result, but that's good. We can learn from our failure experience. So that's why we need to reflect on our experience. Otherwise, it's just an experience.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that kind of transitions to the fourth benefit, right? Is the role that reflection plays in the participation of a professional learning community. And so you kind of alluded to the fact that the reflection should happen. So how does it happen, and when does it happen?
Yeah, so this one is also depends on different stage. Mm-hmm. So like I said, if you are new to the ESO, if you join the Arbenz workshop, you probably heard a lot of new terminologies or teaching pedagogies, the strategies they share, which is wonderful. So at least this bring light up an idea. Can I use it? Does that going to benefit my student? Does that always work? Should I make any modifications? You see, even you only stay on the thinking stage, you are still good. But as I mentioned earlier, if you are a little bit proactive, yeah, you may design this. You may already include these new ideas into your lesson plan, into your class activities. And even more, you can implement that. Mm-hmm. So this is like a one way to do the reflection. But also, as I mentioned earlier, we can hear, listen, learn from other people's experience, whether that's a good, well-developed result or it's a failure experience. So that you listen to other people's experience, you're already doing the reflection. And another way I'm thinking to do the reflection, that's I later on developed that is, when a lot of those professional learning community or organizations call for a proposal for presenting, that's sometimes where I feel like it kind of like forced me to have a structure, certain way how to write the proposal. But that's really led me to slow down to think about, do I have something to share with the community, with my audience? Is that valuable?
Mm-hmm.
If I want to present a workshop at those conferences, does my instructional design make sense? Does that engage my participants? That's which all of you who is listen to this podcast or maybe attending in-person session. So in that way, it's another, I feel like it's a little bit structured and also more formal way to do a reflection. Mm-hmm. And also you have to put things in writing when you submit a call for proposal. So there is really depends on what is your goal? What is your need? But there is definitely doing some reflections on the ways to enhance your teaching and to adjust your practices. That will be the goal why you want to be part of active professional learning communities.
It's almost like backwards planning.
Yeah.
Right? In a way, right? Because you're ultimately you're looking ahead to the classroom and the students and their success. And then kind of doubling back and seeing how you get there. So very interesting, very helpful article, which I will share so that our listeners have access to that. And as you have been talking about, you know, you've been sprinkling mathematics throughout the conversation because that's your lens and that's what you're connecting. You talked about, well, you kind of alluded to like perceptions about mm-hmm. the challenge of integrating literacy skills in mathematics classes. You yourself said you had challenges as you were in school. So what are some of those perceptions that you've encountered?
Yeah, so when we dive into this topic, I want to give you a little bit background. So mm-hmm. I said I went back to school while I'm teaching full-time. My second master was in bilingual childhood education. Mm-hmm. I was in a research thesis course. So I did my teacher action research about literacy in mathematics. So because I kind of like used my student as my study subject, one of my honored class, freshman honored algebra class.
Mm-hmm.
very interesting result, because the question we want to talk now is about teachers' perception, teachers' responsibility. Mm-hmm. I want to see, is just because how we see things differently that's why we view English learner language teaching differently. Mm-hmm. So part of my teacher action research, I interview the teachers from mathematics department. That's my colleagues I'm working with every day. But mm-hmm. I also went to English language art department, and also back then we called the ESL, now is English as a new language in our department. So I also interviewed some teacher there. Very interesting. Every single math teacher I interview, they all say, this is not my responsibility. Similar to what I mentioned again, I was trained as a math teacher. Why mm-hmm. I'm even struggle teaching them the mathematics content? Why do I have time to teach language or to literacy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should be English teacher's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's very, yeah, I even interviewed some science teacher because, yeah, I don't want to only focus on mathematics, also like science teacher's perspective, since we don't have many math teacher in the department back then. Then when I go to the ENL department and the ELA department, the English Language Art department, that is totally different. They see language even in everyday life. Of course, yeah, we are not always communicating in academic, in content, right? We also need to use the language to communicate. They feel like they kind of like agree the blueprint principle number one. Every teacher should consider as teachers of English language learner. But later, what I found out was interesting was, because I did a lot of literature reviews about literacy and mathematics, but you know, usually when we talk about literacy or the language, you always talk about listening, speaking, reading, and writing. I just wonder, like, which language competencies is more direct relates to content learning?
Hmm.
And a lot of research I have read, they all agreed on that. In fact, the spelling, English vocabulary spelling, that have a strong correlation in relates to mathematics outcomes. That's very interesting. It says, if I memorize all my vocabulary, does that going to help me to learn my mathematics? They find out that they have a strong correlation. However, reading comprehension have a very strong direct correlation with mathematical word problems. I feel like I think that makes sense, because while I was teaching, I was transitioning from algebra one, the integrated algebra, to common core standard. Sometimes we always ask, does the common core regions exam or those standardized exam, is this a language test or is it really a mathematics test? Especially in word problems, you need to understand you need to make the sense of the problem, right? You need to understand what the information is given. What is missing? What's the problem or the things you're looking for? And then you set up the mathematical equations in order to solve that. So that's exactly my research design. So I gave 10 mathematical word problems. It's all one-step equations. For example, it's like, oh, Jennifer has 10 apples. She ate 3. How many left? Something like that. But then I said in another version, exactly the same 10 questions from the word problem, I turned that into algebraic expression, like 10 minus x equal to 3, right? That's exactly the same. And I gave those 10 questions to the student separately. The same set student, they did both version A and version B. And it turns out that the 10 questions, the average score for the word problems was only around 30.
Wow.
But if I give them the purely like x, like 10 minus x equal to 3 solving for equation, the average score was 70.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows me my students understand their mathematics concept for the one-step linear equation, but they had a hard time to translate from English language to mathematical symbols.
Or even explaining how they got to that answer.
Exactly. So that is why I totally agree with all those literature research. I totally agree. There is a strong connection between reading comprehension and mathematical word problems. So in that way, that's after I went back to the math department to show them those research. I didn't make up those stories. And also my result, I feel like, you see, if we can teach our English language learners better in our mathematics class, right? If they can understand the academic vocabulary better, that's also translate into better outcomes for our mathematics exam result as well. So this is a really a win-win situation.
Yeah.
So after I share this feedback and some teachers said, okay, that's another perception. I want to support, but as you know, we were trained in a teacher preparation program as a math teacher. I don't know any other strategies. So that's some teachers, you know, they really care about their student. They want to do more than what they're supposed to do. But I totally understand. Not everybody like myself, because I experienced the struggle as an English learner myself.
Right.
Because of my struggle, my profession, I want to go back to school to learn more. Yeah, imagine how many people certified in both math and bilingual ed and ESL. I also have a Chinese certification. Mm-hmm. But you don't, yeah, what I'm trying to say here, you don't need to get a formally certified in ESL in bilingual ed. So that's why you can come to the Arbenz workshop or any other workshops relates to English language learners, relates to teaching pedagogies focused on literacies. But another interesting fact I found from the research when I finished reading the literatures was general literacy skills doesn't work. Like imagine you as a classroom teacher, you usually like to go to a workshop, the presenter can demonstrate how to use the strategy. So in that way, you can see how to implement that. And that will be easier for you to bring back to your classroom. So that is why as a professional trainer provider, yeah, so that's the work I'm sending back to the Arbenz colleagues. Are you as a resource specialist? So you should design specific literacy strategies for content teacher. You cannot just teach a general strategy. You better to incorporate some content. So in that way, when you demonstrate this strategy and using the subject content knowledge and then the topics that teachers from the subject department are more familiar with, so that will make their life easier as well.
Thinking on the other side of the coin, thinking mm-hmm. about ENL teachers, when they support students, they often have students that are in different subject areas, they're different grade levels. And in order for them to support the students, they have to be familiar with the vocabulary.
Exactly.
That's specific to the content too.
Yeah, that's where I see the co-teaching. As mm-hmm. you know, for the ENL program based in New York State, we have standalone, we have integrated ENL. And right. based on the unit of study, based on the student language proficiency level, they may have a flexibility to integrate in English language arts. That's more directly makes sense because that's a language having involved. But when they have a flexibility, that also can be integrated in other core content area like math or science.
Yep.
So another way I highly recommend if you are ENL teacher, I didn't mention that because I did my teacher action research were more focused on the content teacher.
Right.
But I do know that ENL teachers also struggle with the content subject as well. So that's why that co-planning
yes.
time, it is very important. So you can look at the ahead of time, but at least you know what are some major topics you're going to teach. You may ask the content teacher, what are some key vocabularies? Yeah, do we need a pre-teach? Yeah, can we find some maybe visuals or using technology or short video to explain some topics, especially in content area, in mathematics, a lot of things are very abstract, right? It's yes. very abstract concept.
Yes.
Yeah, we may not have a concrete objects to talk about. For example, if you're teaching, like say fruits, oh, this is an orange, this is an apple, you even can bring a real one or a real yes. picture. You
right.
talk to student, prime number, quadratic equation, even number, not that easy, right? So
right.
that's why I think you as a language teacher, when you're meeting with your content teacher, co-planning, you can bring up those questions and ideas and they can brainstorm together. So for example, because I was a math teacher, high school math teacher, when I'm teaching about even number, you can think, what do we have in pair in our life?
Mm-hmm.
especially in our Chinese culture, a pair of chopsticks. Yeah, we yeah. don't just using one single stick. Yeah. We need using a pair of chopsticks that mm-hmm. comes in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you are the what other things you can imagine in our life, it comes in pairs. So mm-hmm. in that way, so that's even, right?
Right.
Yeah. So in that way, you can bring a lot of, you're still up to the rigor, you're still up to the standard in terms of the content, but you just find something students feel more familiar with. We are not trying to water it down. Yeah, ESL students are capable to do the work. Like myself, when I first came, I'm not stupid just because I don't know how to express my thinking, my knowledge in the English language. That doesn't mean I don't know the content, especially when you're working with a little bit older aged kids. Yeah. It's like their cognitive development, their psychological development is up to a stage. They know a lot of abstract thinking. They know a lot of abstract idea, but just struggle using a content-specific vocabulary to express themselves. Even just like a general daily conversation, it took a lot of courage for them to open their mouths.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they have to kind of think of the concept in their home language, then translate mm-hmm. it to English, and then say it. So.
Yeah, that's exactly. I didn't notice that. Why did my mathematics education program in New York University involve my mathematics? I think they call it mathematics for elementary school teachers. So my professor asked us multiplication questions. We don't need to verbally say out the result, but I have to do my times table in Chinese. And then later she wanted us, for those people who speak other languages in my class, we do have classmates speak Spanish, I speak Chinese. So mm-hmm. for example, 3 times 5 is equal to what? So I have to say in Chinese, 3×5=15. So that took a few seconds. As my professor said, you see, students usually using the home language to do the numerical calculation. And after they figure out the result is 15 in their home language, then they translate that to output as 15. So that's why giving student thinking time, mm-hmm. individual time, the waiting time. Some people call 5 Mississippi, 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, the 5 seconds rule, it is very important. And also what I learned from my professor, they said, I think some psychologists, they did a study.
Mm-hmm.
When you start counting, if you don't need to output verbally, you usually always go back to your primary language.
Mm.
Like for my case, even as a math teacher, yeah, when you're talking about the money or big data, like over 1,000, I still need to count my fingers. I still need a 3-digit is a comma because my number system in Chinese is not the same as 1,000,000,000,000,000,000. So I always write it out, like to count my place values as well. When I do my multiplications, I'm always going back to Chinese Mandarin. When you ask me to count how many people in this room, like say, if I do a workshop, how many people participated in my session today? If I don't need to verbally output, I'm just counting 1, 2, 3, 4 in Chinese.
Right.
Yeah. So think about if you do speak any other language rather than English, especially that's your first language, think about, is that true for you? Yeah, my professor pointed that out. I said, yeah, that's true. I always count and multiply, do most of my general basic arithmetic, like a number calculation in Chinese, because I only took my Math 1 in Chinese, the regions I took in Chinese version. And then back then, the Math B, and then later on in college, I studied in mathematics, so I'll use English. If you ask me, like, what is linear equation or maybe differential equation in Chinese, mm-hmm. I know the name. To be honest, initially, I don't know what's those proper noun, right? But I learned it because I have the skill to Google or to look up in dictionaries or to ask for that. But do I really know that meaning behind? I learned in English. Mm-hmm. So for those higher level mathematics, after mm-hmm. I learn a concept in English, that will be easier for me. So that's where I highly encourage students. When you look up a new vocabularies, try to use the dictionaries with English explanations. If that's still struggle, if that's still difficult for you, then you may use bilingual dictionaries. So now I start building that habit. Like back then, I also encourage my students to try to use English dictionaries or glossaries to looking for how do they use English languages to explain this concept. But if it's still too difficult, then maybe using a bilingual dictionaries or resources or glossaries as a scaffolding tools to support you in this process.
I was, as you were talking about, you know, transferring information from one language to the other, it kind of made me think about the influence of the home language on learning English, number one. Number two, I was thinking about whether there was a high likelihood that the mathematical operations might be different in other countries, and how often does that happen in your experience?
Yeah, so that's the initial reason why I said I want to become a math teacher. I thought that was the least amount of language involved.
Mm.
I learned 1 + 1 in Chinese. 一加一等于二. You learn in English 1 + 1 = 2. So that's the reason why I thought, yeah, math is a language, mm-hmm. and it's universal.
Yeah.
But we want to think like a mathematician. We want to explain, to justify, even on our regions or state exam, 3 through 8 assessment program, you need to be able to explain, to justify mm-hmm. your reason. Otherwise, you don't get full credit. Yeah. So then that you need the academic language and English language support your justification, your explanation.
Right.
But overall, like I said, later on, I learned all those higher level mathematics in English,
mm-hmm.
so, or even in my other subject content area as well. So I'm able to process the higher level abstract information in English as well. Like, because using Chinese will be difficult for me now to right. talk about those higher level content.
Mm-hmm. But have you encountered students where the operations might be like they learn, like, say, for example, long division? Some people
yeah.
do long division differently. And so how often do you encounter that with your students, or did you encounter that with your students?
I think that is another part. I personally practice some culturally responsive sustaining education framework. Mm-hmm. Even right now, teaching at New York University, even back then, I'm the only Asian teacher in the high school where I taught. And then we have students from different culture and linguistic background, whether American born or foreign born like myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. You bring that up. Yeah, I see students do division differently, but the result is the same. That's what I encourage people.
Mm-hmm.
Using whatever the method, there's sometimes like one mathematics problem, you have multiple ways, multiple strategies to solve it. I taught you all the strategies. I allow students to use whatever the strategy. I said, as long as you get to the right answer without cheating. Yeah, so we will be good. So I highly encourage that. Yeah, but if I'm teaching something new you've never seen before, that's so good. Mm-hmm. So you are learning something new.
Mm-hmm.
But let's build a connection. How does this process relate to the strategies the way how you did? Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, another beauty I like why doing my current teaching right now. It's not just, especially teaching in mathematics, it's not just get to the result right away. Otherwise, you could just watch a YouTube video. Like literally my thinking process. How do we build a connection of the things you learn before into the topics you do here? So because I did a presentation at the National Council of Teacher of Mathematics, it's about that. Some mathematical operations students learn in second grade or third grade.
Right.
How do we translate that knowledge, the structure of mathematics, into high school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I taught about multi-digit addition, subtraction, or multiplication into polynomials operations, addition, subtraction, and multiplications. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we want, maybe in the future, you can invite me back to give a workshop on that to sure. our fellow teachers. I also incorporate a lot of language teaching about different terminologies, community properties, associative properties, mm-hmm. distributive properties. Yeah, student always struggle. What are those terminologies? I say it's not just a language. It's not just an academic language, because each of those things I just mentioned have a mathematical meaning behind. But I'm not giving you that first. I let students experience the mathematical in an algebraic way or using numbers, and then, oh, this is why called associative, why this is called communicative. And then how do I do, I also using a lot of word formations, like a FAIR model for vocabulary studies. That's also, I presented at the National Council Teacher of Mathematics in 2021. That's what I learned from my TESOL courses. Yeah, that's a one way to learn new vocabularies. Then I can use that in my math class. The science teacher can use that in the science class. Social teacher can use it in the social study. So that's also, I encourage you to join the professional learning community. When you learn some strategies, that's back to the fourth benefit, the reflection. You have to think about that. Can I use that in my class? Mm. Does my student going to benefit from that?
Yeah.
Yes. Do I use completely what I learned? Or do I need to make modifications to make some changes?
I was thinking about like metalinguistics, but you're actually talking about metamathematics. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm using that correctly, but I think that's what it sounds like. And, you know, talking about words, you know, I'm a big word nerd. And because, I'm a linguist. And as I was doing some research, I came across, when I was researching the next generation learning standards for math, I came across this glossary of verbs that are associated with math standards.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could take a look at those and just share, maybe pick a few of them and share some examples of teaching strategies and what the importance of teaching that language and literacy and mathematics would be.
Right. This is also make me think, first of all, thank you for sharing this resource. I've never seen this one before, and it's on New York State Education Department. Yeah. Feel free to share this with our audience as well. Yeah. As you can see, those verbs are very general. Yeah, they may relate to the depths of knowledge, the OK, the Bloom's, right? Different level at a higher level.
Right.
One particular few vocabulary I want to point out here is like demonstrate. Mm. Students demonstrate understanding and application of the content in the standard through narrative. In the practice, they said oral or written. Mm-hmm. Yes, that relates to the spoken language,
right.
Speaking, and also written languages as well, right? Mm-hmm. So students will be able to using language to articulate, to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there are very specific strategies? Maybe that's why you need to talk to your literacy experts, our experts, to learn about some literacy strategies for oral, for written. Then you can apply that into your mathematics class. So one written strategy I always like to use is give a sentence starters. Yeah, you want students to focus on your content in the mathematics you are teaching today. You don't want them to struggle too much about how to start the conversation. Or maybe you can give a sentence starter. The reason why I know this is correct because they feel in that. So you give them the beginning, right? So you also form their habit how to do the demonstration verbally. They can, or in the written language as well. In another word, describe. Describe requires that student illustrate their thinking or justification through verbal. In parentheses, also oral or written statement. Yeah, this is very important for the statewide exam.
Right.
Especially for the second part, second day, the extended response. Yeah, I used to be a content trainer while I was a classroom teacher to train other teachers how to do the scoring. You cannot just give the answer. It's not going to give you full credit. You also need to justify why what you did. But in this way, you can be illustrate. You can draw the pictures, right? Picture, you also get a lot of information or literacy from the pictures as well. But you can also using mathematical equations, symbols. So that's why I said mathematics is a language. And also you can use written language to explain. So there are a lot of ways language is heavily involved in language teaching.
Yes.
So I highly encourage you, if you are a content teacher, come to a lot of language workshops with Auburn, because that's also part of your CTLE requirement.
Yes.
Yeah, you need 15%, but if you are a ENL teacher or bilingual teacher, invite your colleagues from content department to join the session with you together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea. And I just wanted to like point out too, when you were talking about demonstrating, and it says including pictures, diagrams, or technology. So yeah. Those are things that you can use for entering and emerging students that may not have that language yet, you can still use those kinds of things to demonstrate their understanding of the content. Just wanted to point that
out. Exactly. Yeah, that's why I remember one of the workshops I did before to train a group of world language teachers. So I'm using Chinese as my demonstration example. So that's good. The audience, they don't understand Chinese, but you can ask question yes or no. So I using the paper plate, I print out a green check and then write across the table. So yes or no. As I said, maybe student doesn't have the language to output.
Right.
But they can show me their understanding using some manipulatives or those like learning tools, right? Yes. Or sometimes you can provide the student the choice. Is this is this apple or orange?
Mm.
Right. So in that way, you only want students to answer one word, either apple or orange. So you don't need to expect students to give you the full sentence. But ideally, you want students to produce, this is an apple, this is an orange, something like that.
Right.
But if you wanted to focus on the vocabulary, that's what you want to teach. So you gave students some options.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You give students some options to choose. Yes. So in that way, like you said, using diagrams, using technologies, using pictures, using diagrams, you still be able to show students thinking. So that's also bring back another topic. We need to find multiple ways to assess students' learning.
Yes.
So that's why I highly encourage and also advocate, we need to give proper assessment. It's better to give your students home language or in a language they feel comfortable or they can understand to use.
Yes.
Yeah, otherwise, similar to my example earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Is this because of my language barrier or is because of my learning disability or is just because I do have that abstract concept and thinking, just no output yet?
Yeah, just not in English yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have really enjoyed talking with you today, and I think all of the information that you mentioned is very helpful for all teachers. And I have to say that I have a new respect for you for getting a 100 on a math regions. I just
Yes, thank you, Glad. Yeah, definitely thank you for having me. But I do want to give a last message. Yeah, I don't know who will be the audience. Yeah, mostly I'm trying to speak as my former teacher perspective, but working at the district level, at the state education department level, I also want to give this message to the supervisors. Whether you are school level building leaders as assistant principal or principal or district level leaders,
right.
I want to give a message to you. Help your teachers to grow professionally.
Mm.
Help your teacher to identify the areas they want to learn. Don't always send them to a workshops or professional training topic that's not going to be interested in the topic or not going to benefit them. Listen to your teachers. Listen to their struggles. Help them to identify the workshops related to language teaching, language strategies, relates to co-teaching, relates to ESOL. Yeah, recommend them, encourage them to join our workshops offered by Auburn families as well. So, and also as a district leaders, when you try to provide the professional learning opportunities similar to what I throw back to collect to other resource specialists as well. Yeah, think about how can you create content-specific language teaching strategies. How can you bridge the collaboration between content teacher and ESOL teacher or bilingual certified teacher as well? So this is the one last message I want to give to the leaders in our education community as well.
Okay. So all of you teachers that are out there listening, have your leaders listen to this too. share it far and wide. That's the message, right?
Yes. And also as a leader, teacher leader, I want you to feel confident. I want you to feel strong enough to tell your leaders, I want to go to a workshop about English language learner. I want to go to a workshop about vocabulary. I want to go to a workshop. So you also need to reflect on your own professional growth. What areas you want to learn a little bit more to learn more. So let your supervisor know as well. So hopefully they will send you or allow you to help you to identify certain opportunities. But definitely topics related to the Arbor, like as I said, I used to work for the OBEW, and I said, I know the quality and all those wonderful workshops, resources provided, developed by Auburn colleagues. Yeah, feel free to sign up for their future trainings as well.
Yeah, I can even share the link to all of the Auburn websites on NYSED, because, you know, just like teachers, we have our own niches too of specialty areas that we focus on in the different Auburns. So, you know, somebody might have something that maybe we don't do, and vice versa.
Exactly. And for those teacher leaders, like I encouraged earlier, if you have great ideas or best practices, I highly recommend you contact your Arbor as well. Yes. Or maybe we can help you to identify some other venues, for example, like NESTISO, New York Subway, or other conferences to show off, share with your best practices. So in that way, you really find the time to reflect on your teaching practices. At the same time, you'll help your fellow colleagues in our educational community as well.
Yes. Well, I think that's a great place to end. I think great message to end on. Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for listening today. If you would like to learn more about the brilliant guest we had on today's episode or any of the resources we discussed, please visit the Mid-State Auburn webpage. This podcast is produced by Mid-State Auburn at OCM BOCES, and our theme music is Catalyst from Purple Planet Music. We hope that you'll tune in next time for more of our burning questions.